To Computer Science E259. My name is David Malin. This is lecture, help me out, 11? 12? We're up to 12. AJAX. So what is AJAX? Okay. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted over here. Okay, AJAX is? Okay, asynchronous JavaScript. I thought you might be reading it from the slide there. Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. So you've probably gotten a taste of this in terms of usage. So Google Maps is the example that we've often cited as a very clean interface in terms of creating the illusion of a very interactive application that's nonetheless within the confines of a web browser. This, of course, is an alternative to what is largely the status quo these days in terms of web-based UIs. So DHTML, HTML, but there's a remarkable difference between an AJAX-based application and a typical web application that's just based on HTTP requests and responses and HTML markup and so forth. I mean, there's something curious about what you gain from using JavaScript and XML asynchronously, that is, behind the scenes. Yeah?
Well, a lot of it's server-side, so we're updating the content within that defined space. You're not refreshing the page all the time.
Right.
So you can basically event drive your web app, so your web app now becomes more common to a desktop application that users are more familiar with.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, the most obvious visual difference is that you're not incurring constant page refreshes, but rather things are much more smooth, much more seamless. When the data on the screen is going to be updated, it's not going to be the result of going to some new URL, watching a little globe spin, and then a new page being spit out. Rather, there's going to be something behind the scenes. You might have a nice little graphical stopwatch displayed on the screen, but that's going to be a function of what the application is doing, not what the browser is doing. Rather, you will stay theoretically at the same URL the entire time. And with Google Maps, that's precisely the situation. And only once you click on their special link to this page link do you actually get a dynamically generated HTTP GET string in your URL that allows you to then pass that map along to someone else. So AJAX, asynchronous JavaScript and XML, it's not so much a technology in and of itself as it is just a moniker for the use of different technologies. So think DHTML. What is DHTML? Dynamic HTML. What does that mean?
HTML can make a dynamic.
Not quite. So it's not dynamically generated as much as it is a combination of three different technologies. HTML being one, or XHTML, JavaScript again, and not JSP. It can be viewed entirely client-side, cascading style sheets. So those three technologies might be wrapped up into this moniker of DHTML. And so that's sort of what AJAX is. It's not a language that you learn. It's rather a technique, a framework that makes use of JavaScript and that these days increasingly is supported by more browsers, but certainly not all or the oldest.
There's a big difference between DHTML and AJAX. Is that AJAX is more server-side? And DHTML is more client-side.
Oh, absolutely. So I don't mean to compare the two beyond saying that both of them are acronyms that don't necessarily describe languages, but the combination of other technologies. So yes, DHTML in that regard is very much client-side, whereas AJAX, by design, has this server-side component. So what I thought would be particularly fun today, rather than talking about things in the abstract, would be to turn the reins over to a gentleman who's been working at HBS for the past several years, and in recent years has spent a good amount of time developing his and their own AJAX applications. And so that I get this precisely right, I've been prepped with a little blurb here, which I will read verbatim so that I make no errors. We have tonight, though, Mr. David Lieberman, standing to my left, joining us, who's a senior software engineer with HBS, Harvard Business School, across the river, their Educational Technologies and Multimedia Group. He joined HBS's IT group in 1999 as a web developer with a handful of JavaScript skills and successfully jockeyed that background into a software engineering post during a very forgiving labor market. Over the years, he has developed several XML-based applications at HBS, including authoring and delivery environment for synchronized multimedia presentations and an authoring and delivery environment for online Flash-based subject tutorials. He also wrote the core code for the Java implementation of Harvard's university-wide XML-based application configuration service. So with that said, allow me to pass the baton and mic to Mr. David Lieberman. If you wouldn't mind giving him a warm welcome, that would be wonderful.
tell you the technology of this room is already well past my skills. Okay. You've gone over some of what I wanted to emphasize in my first slide here. Why bother with this stuff? Do you get a performance gain? Maybe. You're not downloading an entire HTTP request with all of your page information in it. On the other hand, if your server-side code isn't particularly efficient, your users are still going to see a noticeable delay. So performance gains are not an absolute given here, and I'll be able to demonstrate that shortly. Is your code simpler? Not even close. You're now talking about writing fairly complex UIs. You're turning your browser into what is essentially the gold standard for a thin client. So now not only do you need to be able to write reasonably competent Java, you're also going to be able to write reasonably competent JavaScript. And that's essentially learning what amounts to a whole new language. There are some similarities, but the differences are enough to trip you up if you get too hung up on the similarities. Are you going to be able to write better, more intuitive UIs? Absolutely. That's the real reason to get into this. You're going to be able to present your users with a tool that they can actually use, and if you do it well, a tool they might even enjoy using. Finally, yeah. At HBS, we've been building apps that we've put in front of MBA students through a web-only environment for 6 to 7 years. In the last 4 years, the architecture that we've been using to build those apps has changed not one little bit. Now these folks are coming in here, they're used to Gmail, they're used to Google Maps, they're used to My Yahoo, they're used to My Google. All of these facilities that are just out there, free for all these end users to take advantage of, all rely on this technology. They all put it way up front because it's way too cool for them to be playing with it behind the scenes. And I really think it's important that we try to keep up with what our users are expecting to see in the world. Frankly, we could get by with just writing the apps along the same lines that we're doing. Honestly, everything you can do in AJAX, you can do with standard HTTP request response, page loads. There's not a lot of magic about the data transfer. It's about the presentation layer. I got into this thinking fairly clearly about what I wanted to do with AJAX, or I shouldn't say clearly, but at least trying to keep the question in the forefront of my mind as I'm working on this. And let me also backtrack and say I haven't really been working for years in AJAX, months. AJAX has been around. Actually, the XML HTTP request object was introduced, I think, in Explorer 5. And IE didn't really, or Microsoft didn't really have a handle on what it was they had introduced into the mix until it started showing up in Mozilla browsers and people actually started playing with it. And then they realized that they had actually introduced something pretty powerful. What I want to be able to do if I'm going to use AJAX effectively is take the protocol out of the equation. What do I mean by that? I want to put the data exchange in the foreground of what I'm thinking about. I don't want to have to be worried about how data is getting back and forth. What I'm thinking about really is something that looks a little bit like web services. I want to be able to send protocol-free information back and forth between the client and the server. I don't want to have to be worried about HTTP requests or response if I can possibly avoid it, because I don't want to do that. Why? Ew. I've always found that whole model, especially when you're talking about moving fairly complex pieces of information back and forth, large trees, trying to parse through it, get a bunch of parameters out of it that you've got little... you've actually got to parse a parameter name because you've got four different pieces of information that are plugged into the parameter name. You have to take those apart and figure out what collection the piece of information goes to. I just as soon throw all that away. So what I want to be able to do is send XML in up from the client, XML back down from the server. Now think about what that means if you're working on web applications and your testing environment, right? The biggest pain in the rear about building a web application and figuring out how to test it is that your client code and your server code, in order to be tested fully functionally, have to move along in parallel with one another. And you've got to actually build the web piece and deploy it to make sure that all of your server-side code is actually functioning, because so much of it is dependent on the architecture. Struts, any Struts users in here? Building J2EE applications with Jakarta Struts? No, it's old hat. It's a huge framework that Jakarta supplies. We've been using it at HBS for years, that allows you to create forms, populate the forms. The forms are pre-populated with information depending on how you filter down the information when the user hits it. It's a huge overhead architecture, and in order to make sure that in the final analysis your server-side code works, you've got to build that piece and test it as well. If what you're transferring back and forth is XML, you can write tests right from the command line. And I found that to be a huge buy. Is anybody familiar with the No Fluff, Just Stuff seminar series? It's a professional series, relatively young, that's run by a fairly large contingent of high power players in the Java community. They held a session about 2 months ago up in Danvers that I attended, and I made it a point to hit every single Ajax discussion that they had. And they almost all amounted to the same thing. Wow, this is so cool, look what you can do. And I saw a whole bunch of client-side demonstrations. All right, but what are the best practices for actually implementing this on the server side? There was one discussion from one fairly big name, whom I won't name because I don't want to talk him down, but he talked about implementing an Ajax architecture in Spring MVC. Is anybody familiar with that? I have to say, I've not used that. And the thrust of his discussion was, look how easy it is to build an Ajax application using Spring MVC. I came away from his discussion thinking, A, it's not. B, I don't want to know anything about Spring MVC. There's very little that I have been able to find about standardized best practices for using Ajax with Java. Struts, no. Struts is essentially a page flow architecture. In order to stick Ajax into Struts, I actually have to turn off some of the features that make Struts what it is. Struts does a process. At the end of its process, it says, okay, you failed, you succeeded, I'm going to go to the appropriate page. This is Ajax, so you don't load a page. So you actually have to shut Struts up, yank the request out, send it back through the J2EE servlet architecture, and then send your information down that way. If I have to rip apart a framework to use it, what's the point of using the framework? All right, these are, I just wanted to go over quickly the components of the XML HTTP request object and the client. Its properties, a response text coming down from the server. It also will give you a response XML object if your response text is parsable XML. It doesn't have to be. It can be any random string of text. It could be completely formatted, styled HTML that you're going to stuff right into some component in the browser. My recommendation? Don't. There's no good reason for you to be formatting HTML output in your server-side code. If you find yourself writing quote, angle bracket, some XML, some HTML, angle bracket, close quote, don't. Ready state. Now that's an internal value. You'll have a look at what that is. Essentially, ready state, I think, has four options. The one that you're most interested in is four, which means response successfully completed. And it also will give you a status integer value, which is the HTTP response code, such as 200, succeeded, 404, not found, 500, please go check your code because it's really screwed up. The methods, and this is not comprehensive, these are the ones I'm familiar with because I use them, but I don't think there's a lot that I've missed. The open method, this is how you make your request to the server. It takes a string, method, get or post, the URL that you're hitting, and a Boolean asynchronous. I think it defaults to true. You could actually set it to false. I've tried to do this and it hasn't worked, but it ostensibly does is essentially locks up your server, or I mean locks up your client rather, and it ends up behaving exactly as any other request for new content. You can't do anything with your client while it's waiting for the response to come back from the server. And then the send, which can take a null argument. That's actually a fairly important piece, and I'll get back to that. And then the event that gets fired, on ready state change, which just catches the value when that ready state member variable changes during usage. Okay. Some quick JavaScript code. These are more or less the bait stuff you'll find everywhere out there. If you look up, how do I use an AJAX request or an XML HTTP request object, this is more or less what you'll find. What I do is when I create my function where I'm going to make one of these requests, I create variables to hold the request and the response. The response is the text, could also be the XML. Find your request change. How do I want to talk about this? Well, we can see bind request change is going to get fired every time ready state changes. It's bound to that on ready state change event. And what I'm going to do is if I grab it and my ready state is 4, my next question is, okay, how about status? Did I get a decent response? Equals 200, yes. Then in this case, what I do is map the AJAX result variable to the response XML, the parsable XML that I got back from the server. I could also have just taken the text. The callback. Can you maybe give me an idea what that eval method is doing? About fifth line in. Anyone want to take a stab at that? Yeah?
Is it checking to see what's being returned as the AJAX result?
No, it's not a check at all. There's actually very little and probably should be some more error checking in here. JavaScript's eval method essentially will take any string and try to run it as JavaScript. This is extremely powerful stuff, and it's also fairly dangerous stuff. You can throw anything at that eval method, and if JavaScript can find a function that matches that, it'll go ahead and do it. So what I'm saying is up there, I've thrown in a string that is a method name, some Java method, some Java function. I'm saying run that function against the AJAX result I just created. Make sense? Not make sense. Yeah?
Is the JavaScript all the Java security sandbox? So if you pass it an rm-r star, it won't beat your system?
Well, it's not allowed to get very far into your system operations at all. It's fairly contained that way, yeah.
Could you repeat or paraphrase the question so the distance students can...
Sure. In this case, the question was I making much sense at all? But the question from the student was, does JavaScript follow the Java sandbox security functions? The answer is it doesn't need to, because JavaScript doesn't have that much access to your system. And finally, here's where we actually instantiate the XML HTTP request object and use it. So we're populating the variable, the AJAX request variable, with a new instance of this object, and notice that I have to play my which browser are you game to make sure I get the right version of the XML HTTP request object. Right? If I'm in IE, I need to use the ActiveX feature to get it out of there. If I'm in Mozilla, I can just go ahead and grab it as a new instance. Once I've successfully retrieved one of these things, and there's that if AJAX request, anybody know what that's doing? Right. An AJAX request isn't a Boolean, so how does that work? In JavaScript, essentially anything can be a Boolean. If it exists, you get a true. Fairly straightforward, pretty easy to use. Here's where I grab that onReadyStateChange event and map it to the bindRequestChange method I defined. Then I'm going to send my request. I'm going to use, in this case, a get. And here I'm sending a null variable that could also be left blank. So the request body in this instance and in most usages of the XML HTTP request is empty, which means what? Where's your query? URL parameters. That URL value is going to look like my servlet question mark param 1 equals this value and param 2 equals that value. And the servlet's going to take this thing and parse its request parameters, run its process, and then send some information back down through the response. Clear? Okay. So that was just a quick survey of how that piece is used in the JavaScript. The server-side stuff is not actually all that new or exciting. It's stuff that you've all done in other environments, and you're just pushing some information down an HTTP response as a string, and I'll show you an example of that shortly. I've built three different applications that have used this in limited ways at HBS. The first is the Application Access Administrative Environment. Application Access is the recently developed standard we're working on so that all of our applications have the same model for saying, you can use this, you can't use that. Pretty straightforward. You need some kind of administrative environment to map people to groups, to roles, to permissions. That's where this comes in. The tutorial platform, the authoring environment. Now, this is our Flash-based content delivery system. I've thrown a few pieces of Ajax in there to make a couple of the bits of functionality a little bit easier to manage. And our video delivery system, more or less the same thing. Can anybody see a common thread in these three pieces that I've built this into? They're all admin environments. Very small user communities. In fact, I'm reasonably certain I'm on a first-name basis with anybody who's likely to run against one of my Ajax functions, which allowed me to take a few pieces of uncertainty out of the equation. One, I can be reasonably certain that all of these users are going to be running browsers with JavaScript enabled. If you hit a user whose JavaScript is disabled because they have issues about security, they're going to be out of luck. There are various ways you can approach that. I work at an academic institution. Even my broader audience is a relatively captive audience. So we can more or less insist, for instance, if we were to start using this on a broader basis, that all of our MBA students have to run their browsers with JavaScript enabled. If I work for Macy's and I'm trying to sell you a pair of pants and you come to my application and my application says, sorry, I can't help you, you're not running JavaScript enabled, I've just lost Macy's a sale. There are ways to get around that. If you're using a fairly strongly defined and well-executed MVC architecture, does anybody know what that is? Model View Controller Architecture. This is essentially buzzwords for keep your business logic separate from your display logic. If you've got great big chunks of JSP pages, for instance, and your JSP page has all kinds of database queries and very complex server logic baked right into that, your display logic and your business logic are all in the same place. You can't just take chunks out of that and use it somewhere else. Here's an environment where I may be running something, some piece of business that eventually comes up from an Ajax request, goes back down through an Ajax request, but all the logic is over here separated from that, so that I could also have a struts interface for it. The information comes in through a struts query, goes back down through a struts response, page loads for the end user, and I haven't thrown anybody overboard, basically. And the way you would manage that on the client side is very simple. In the JavaScript, all of your actions would be hooked up to, say, an anchor, a hypertext reference link. And you're going to have two pieces here, and I should have sketched this out. You have your standard href. This is going to point to your struts action or whatever it is that's running on your server side. Then you're going to have another piece that says, on click, run this JavaScript. And the last piece of that JavaScript, that's going to send off your Ajax request. Semicolon, return false. Which does what? If your JavaScript is enabled, when you hit that hypertext link, return false means I'm not going to follow the link. I'm going to hit the Ajax request. I'm going to wait for the response. I'm going to stop. So all that stuff that's being triggered over to the struts side of the house for all these users who aren't running JavaScript, that never even gets invoked. I don't have to be that good because I can control my user base. If you're outside in the world and you're using this stuff, those are the issues you're going to have to think about. How many people am I throwing off the boat? You know, there are lots of ways to look at that question. If you have an AM radio, you can't pick up FM band. Got a black and white television, can't watch Technicolor. Running JavaScript disabled in your browser, can't use Ajax. That's one way to do it. Questions? Okay, some examples. Application Access Admin. And I'll see if I can pull up. There we go. This is a really simple-minded implementation of this. All I do in this instance, the only piece of AJAX in this entire environment as it exists today is this bit. I'm mapping some roles to one of the known applications. Which application? Reference implementation for this tool. All that happened was that this was reloaded dynamically from the server. I now know which roles are associated with this application. I can go ahead and begin populating them using the rest of the tool. That's all standard HTTP request stuff. It's a frames environment. If I come back out here, I can hit any one of these other ones. It'll repopulate and get me back to that architecture. By the way, is anybody familiar with Mozilla's Firebug extension? It's this thing down here that's tracking my behavior. I don't know how well you can see it. It shows what the request that I sent up here was. And actually, you can see that I kind of lied to you in this instance. What did I do here? I sent up a GET. Can everybody read this text? It's kind of hard to see. Query parameter. Which X renderer are you going to use? And I'll get to that in a second. I sent a value up, and then I sent an application code. In that first instance, it was the IMPL, and this last one is TUPL, which you can see up there. But the real buy of this particular plugin, if this works, I can open it up, and I can see the XML response in its entirety that came back. Folks do a lot of web application development. This is an indispensable tool if you ever get in that direction. It's a little bit hard to read because of the way this is laid out, but you can see, I think, fairly clearly that that's a completely functional XML document that came back to my server, which I then parsed in JavaScript and used to populate that selection list. Cool? Pretty straightforward? So that was how this particular application went into production, with just that little piece of AJAX baked into it. And if I'm correct, there we are. Tutorials platform authoring environment. Here I got a little more ambitious. Let me show you what a tutorial looks like. Fully Flash-based content. Got a little tree. We can nifty run through this puppy. By the way, Flash is probably the single biggest competitor to AJAX. And they're packaging themselves that way now. I happened to sit through a sales presentation from folks from Adobe who bought Macromedia, who are now marketing Flash, just yesterday. And the first 20 minutes of the presentation or so was why AJAX stinks, don't use it. Now, AJAX is free. So that's what one of these things looks like in real life. Oh, I wanted to show you some code here. I don't know if this is going to work. Let me back up and show you some of what's going on in the application access admin. Here's the servlet that's listening for those AJAX requests. This is awfully hard for me to read. I apologize. So what I've done here, I've created a base class of XML renderers. The original version of this application had a lot more AJAX. So what's left of it now is this one little piece. There was a fairly large library of these XML renderers. I asked in the here in the GET, which has gone away. I apologize. When I was talking about that X renderer, yeah.
Resolution of 1024 by 768.
Not at all. That might, absolutely. Let's give that a shot. At my workspace, I use two monitors. This one is set up at, I leave this one at 1400 and my standard desktop at 1600. And my eyesight isn't fantastic as it is, so it's a great big desktop monitor. So I like a lot of real estate. Is that better? Okay. So here we are back in our class, and I'll get rid of some of this. How many people use IDEA? IDEA, the IDE? How about Eclipse? What's the price differential there? I got to tell you, now Harvard buys IDEA for me, but I couldn't go back. Okay, so here's this XML renderer thing. It's just an object whose sole purpose in life is to generate some XML and then return it as a string. Subclass of this thing, which actually generates some real XML by running a query. And this is more about our code environment than really matters. But here I am using JDOM. We established a preference for JDOM in this class?
I just found out about it a couple days before the class was done. It's just more intuitive.
It's fabulous. How about JXPath? Has anybody played with that from Jakarta? JXPath and JDOM, best possible tools for playing with Java and XML as far as I'm concerned. Get familiar with them. And they play so nicely together. Okay, so here I am creating essentially an XML document. At some point down here, I think you'll see that I've set it. Yep, there's the property set. So this is my subclass of an XML renderer that does a very specific task and returns some very specific XML back down to the client. This is the kind of framework that I've been groping towards. This is sort of its first baby steps. All right, let's go back to tutorials platform. Somewhat more ambitious version of the same thing. Again, I have a factory class. This takes that XML renderer argument from the query, gives me back the appropriate class, throws the appropriate information at the XML renderer subclass, generates the XML, and then the servlet is responsible for sending that back down to the client. Questions? If I'm being completely incoherent, please feel free to tell me. So where have I used that in this authoring environment? In a couple of places. These things are just little metadata bubbles. That was a server request. Give me some information about this particular tutorial in its draft state. They actually will all be identical in each state for the most part. We don't vary this information very much. These are clicks. There's a reason for that. I was saving this for a future slide, but one thing I discovered when I was working on this piece of code, we are not Google. My original version had these things as mouse overs. You can saw over this thing, and you'll trigger, how many server requests would that have been in the span of about a second and a half? If you're not Google and you don't have an acre of servers catching all of these requests, don't do that. Okay, that was a relatively lightweight implementation. Here's where it actually became something of a buy. We build these trees leaf by leaf and insert these items and sort them as we go. In the initial version of the admin interface for this, you would have had to drill down to a given level. Say I went as far as this hardware item. And it gives me the children at its initial children down the tree, right? You can see that? In order to sort these, I would have set up a form with a little box, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., that I would have then had to manually re-enter. And if I entered poor information in there, 1, 3, 5, or 1, 2, 2, inevitably something would get lost. The ordering would get screwed up. It would just be really painful. I go back up one level. So what I implemented here was a drag and drop interface that would allow me to sort the entire tree in one fell swoop, drop it in place, store the changes with an AJAX request, and that was done. That was it. The client-side code for this, here's where I went out on a bit of a limb. I did all the event handling in this. Am I looking at the right class? Yep. Entirely on my own. So if I can find one of those event handlers, maybe this is the wrong class. Let's try that one. By the way, how cool is this? I'm looking at a JavaScript structure in my IDE. Up until about a year ago, I don't think that was even feasible. So just being able to drill through this thing and figure out, for instance, I want to take a look at what happens on that event. 500 for the IDE well spent. And here's where I've begun doing all of my own event handling in this architecture. So there are good reasons to do this, mostly because I find there's value in beating my head against the wall until I really understand something. But there are also really good reasons not to do this, because it's really painful code to write. And this is what I was talking about, knowing a lot about JavaScript to get this to work. IE and Mozilla have completely different models for handling events. To try to write your own code to handle the different ways that they manage their events, not fun. Ultimately, I probably ought not to have put this in front of end users until I had cleaned that up, but you know, deadlines being what they are. One last piece of AJAX that we threw in to this architecture, and I'll have to go back to one that I'm reasonably certain will work to demonstrate this. Not in here. My apologies. Somewhere in here, there's an option for bringing up a WYSIWYG editor for the entire tutorial's content. And where did that go? Maybe it's at the module level. Edit content text. There we go. I need to bring up a tutorial where the text is correctly formatted. These are all written in XML, but the DTD for the XML and the content has changed so much over the last years that there are some processes that simply don't work. Is that the one I was just in? Hope not. I think it is, isn't it? Yes, it is. One last try, and then I'll give up. There we are. All right. So I'm going to drill down here somewhere where I want to make a change to some content. Now, imagine what would happen if this were an HTML environment, and I hit this button to edit this piece of content. Here I got an editing window right in place. Notice that I'm scrolled 3/4 of the way down the page. If this had been a page reload, bang, back up to the top of the page, good luck, scroll back down until you find that form that you want to play with. And here I would make some changes, which I won't make because this is actually live content, but you can see we've got a nice plug-in WYSIWYG editor that one of my colleagues found and threw in there. And then I could submit that change, which I won't in this case. And that would have gone right back up to the server, and that data would have been changed live relatively painlessly, I think. Comments? I'm looking for applause here. Okay. Let's go back to presentation. So that was the three pieces that we threw in there: metadata, viewing, tree sorting, rich text editor. What were the gotchas that came up in this process when I was working on these two applications? One, support issues. I built the application access admin tool, but it was a sort of an infrastructure piece of code that I wasn't going to be responsible for owning forever. My primary responsibility is multimedia and courseware. So this was going to be handed off to some other developer who was going to be looking at this and going, what the heck are you handing me? The original version of this thing was a complete 100% Ajax application. I got good and slapped. So I had to rip out most of that, the little drop menu piece I got left in there. Passive-aggressive office politics. I didn't want to rip it out, so I didn't. I went over that. Be careful how you treat your servers. Be nice to them. They'll be nice to you. The JavaScript DOM API. I don't like it. It's way too much like JAXP. I don't like JAXP. I want something that feels a lot more like JDOM, something that's really easy and intuitive to use. Aha. In the tutorials platform environment, what I was doing was creating an XML document in the client in memory at runtime, an empty XML document that I was then populating with the information I was pushing up to the server, i.e. has an ActiveX object for a new XML document. Mozilla browsers just do it. Give me a new XML document. I pass it an argument for the root node. I've got an XML document. Safari hasn't implemented that. I didn't find this out until the guy who sits next to me, who uses a Macintosh, was playing with this thing in Safari. What was the solution here? There's a Firefox build for the Mac. Now, again, these are applications where I'm on a first-name basis with everybody who's using my little Ajax tools. I can say that. If this were going out to the wide world, the recently departed dean of the business school was a Macintosh user. I'm almost certain he used Safari and not Firefox. That's not something you want to put in front of the dean of the Harvard Business School and watch it fail. So, a gotcha. All right, the video tools implementation of this. Okay, I just did this again in an admin environment for what we call portals, and I'll show you some examples of these. This is a portal. What portals have in common is that they are ordered, they provide ordered collections of video assets for playback. Remember what I was saying about server-side code? This, by the way, is a web services product that we bought and integrated into our environment. I take no responsibility for the fact that every web services query takes between 4 and 8 seconds to return. There's nothing I can do about that. Yet. But here, in any case, is another example of an ordered collection. Also a portal. We needed an admin environment for these as well. Actually, we had an admin environment, and it was an entirely HTTP request response-driven environment. Make a change, download a new page, make a change, download a new page. And it was all ad hoc. All the portals had the same sorts of content. They all had to have this different versions of the same admin architecture because they were all built using different HTTP, different HTML, rather. And it was just a mess to maintain. You had all these processes to do the same thing, but they all looked totally different in each of the three portals that we support. So in this case, what I wanted to do was rip out all the old admin architecture. I was adding a new piece, which is support for RSS feeds of our video content. And in doing that, I also wanted to take all of our old content management or portal management admin features and plug them into the same sort of architecture. So, for instance, I need to be able to resort the assets. I go into sort mode, I pull them around, I store it, this isn't live, I'm safe. And here would have been a good instance of a good reason to use the synchronized option for the Ajax request, because I've essentially locked up the browser anyway, I might as well. And as I say, I've tried to use that, and it just hasn't behaved the way I'd like. So what I've done in this case is simply hide the admin options until the processing is finished. Let's see if we can get this one to behave a little bit more lively. We provide high bandwidth, mega high bandwidth, as in a gigabit stream for classroom use, so you would get a full stream video. And we keep a library of videos specific to classes, and they again are just, it's just a portal with a collection of assets. So again, the same options apply. I can resort. And in this case, we also provide something, a fake tree, just by doing indents. So I had to add another little piece of JavaScript here that allows me to push something in as far as it'll go, or out as far as it'll go. And that actually ended up being fairly easy to build once I got the core scripting functionality to work. And here's where I went somewhat off the reservation, at least from the perspective of this class, because owing to the issue with Safari not being able to create an XML document on the fly, and the issue of parsing the DOM, the XML DOM in JavaScript, I changed my data model to JSON, which is what? JavaScript Object Notation. And the cool thing about JavaScript Object Notation, how did I get so far ahead here? Does anybody know how to go back in a PowerPoint presentation? There we go. There is an API for it in Java. There's an API for it in Perl. There's actually a huge library of JSON manipulation packages. They're all available from json.org. And it's an extremely cool tool. And I'm speaking as somebody who really likes XML. In a lot of ways, JSON is superior. The one way in which it is not superior is that it's not really human-readable code. And I'll show you some examples, actually. I think I can do one right here. Here's a bit of JSON code that went up to the server. And it's essentially just a bunch of name-value pairs. And you can see that I'm doing most of the same things. In this case, I no longer call it a renderer, I call it a processor. But it amounts to the same thing. And I'll show some of the server-side code in a sec here. Here's what came back. And trust me, even if you were to see this in pretty print, it would be only slightly more intelligible than it is as one long string. For human readability, XML is certainly superior. But for these kinds of data transfers, and I think I can say with reasonable assurance that this is what Yahoo uses for all of its AJAX-based architecture, it really is much easier to manipulate once it comes back down to your client, and it's no harder to deal with on the server than XML. I like to think I also did a somewhat better job of making my JavaScript objects a little bit more coherent. Excuse me. So I've set up the functionality. I think they're reasonably intelligible. This is the JavaScript object that handles my asset sorting for all of the different portals. And it just gets the information. Let's see what we've got here. All right. This is the information I send up to the server. And here I'm doing a post. And I'm sending the object itself to the post and a method call. And the method is, where's the render method? There it is, right there. Let me bring up one other JavaScript class here so you can actually see the XML HTTP request in use. Come on. This should look reasonably familiar, right? About an hour ago. Standard bind request change method. This is interesting. What have I done here? The callback method. Now, this is one of these instances where JavaScript does not behave like Java, and it will bite you if you make certain assumptions. The this method in Java is entirely transparent. This is always this. Whatever the thing is that's making the call is where this lives. And you can see that I've used that all over my JavaScript object to go back and forth between, say, properties. Here's the result object. In this case, this.result object is a member property of the ddAssetSort object, and it is a JSON object. And all over my methods, I'm using the this keyword. At runtime, when you trigger an event, the this keyword, I believe if it doesn't refer to the event, it ends up referring to the document. And all of this functionality with all of these thises and all of my methods broke. And I had no idea what was going on with that. It made absolutely no sense to me. And the workaround for that is this that I've highlighted here. Dot call. That's a standard JavaScript function that you can or a method that you can call on any JavaScript method. Make sense? In JavaScript, methods, functions, objects, they're all the same thing. What determines whether or not a method is going to behave like a method is if you invoke it as such by throwing arguments at it or throwing no argument at it. Otherwise, you can just hand it around as a thing. Bind request change. It's a method, but I can throw it around as though it were an object. Is that clear? In this case, I've got a method that I'm referring to by the variable callback. I'm then invoking the standard JavaScript method call on the method. I'm throwing it the object that I passed in as this. The effect of that is to tell method callback that when you invoke this, you're talking about this thing, the controller, and not some other this that you might think would normally be this if I didn't tell you otherwise. Then I throw the arguments at the method that it expects to receive. You have no idea how painful it was to figure out how to make this work. Now you know. Oh, yeah, I do want to show you some examples of what the JSON architecture looks like. So here's my standard my abstract class. This takes the place of the XML renderer class that I was using in the previous implementations. It does essentially the same thing. It absorbs a piece of JSON as input and returns another piece of JSON as output. And there's a concrete implementation. That's not a fair one because you don't actually see much JSON in action. Let me get a better one. Actually, how cool is that? Anybody remember plain text editors? Here's where I construct a brand new JSON object. I just assemble a bunch of name value pairs. JSON is also nice in that it allows you to throw pretty much any piece of information, in some cases strings, some cases primitives. And look at that, data typing. What I wouldn't give to be able to do that in XML. And you can, but I mean, this is so clean, right? If I want to get the thing out as a number, I just tell it's a number. Now, I'm sure that this would throw all kinds of errors if that turned out not to be a number, so I'll treat it nicely and it'll treat you nicely. I haven't gone out of my way to try to break it yet. And I believe in here somewhere, you can see an example of nesting. A JSON object can take a JSON object as a member. It can also take an array of JSON objects as members. So it ends up being every bit as powerful as XML for moving information back and forth. And then the client side, it ends up being much easier to query. Instead of saying, this is an XML document that contains a node of portal type and I want to know its value, which I would have to do with something that looked a lot like JAXP to get at that piece of information, I can just say, hey, resolve object, what's your portal type? And that's as much as it takes to get this information back out when it gets down to the client. I think that's extremely cool. Okay. The pain of trying to figure out how to handle different browser implementations of the event model, different browser implementations of transparencies, et cetera, et cetera. There are umpteen libraries that have been written to take this pain away from you. All of these provide different kinds of normalization so that you can just say, set the transparency to 50%. They go back and say, okay, this is Mozilla, let me do it that way. This is Explorer, let me do it the other way. And it takes all that stuff out of your hair. The only one I can speak to with any kind of authority is the Yahoo library. And what I like about the Yahoo What I like about the Yahoo library is that it's A, well documented, B, it's more like an API than a bunch of plug-in widgets, which allows me to write the tools and to write the application code rather than just saying, throw this thing in here and it'll probably work. But Scriptaculous and Prototype are the ones that I can tell you were talked about ad nauseum at the No Fluff, Just Stuff conference. The Zimbra toolkit is not something I've seen, but I've heard it highly recommended. Zimbra is a... Has anybody seen this thing? So I can get to it. They are marketing an Ajax mail client that puts Gmail to shame. And it looks exactly like any other mail client that you would run on your browser, Thunderbird, Outlook. I don't think I'm going to try to get too far into it because I don't know this site very well, but I'd recommend that you take a look at it, zimbra.com. It's one of the most complete, fully functional Ajax implementations of a browser as a thin client that I've run across. Just incredible stuff. And finally, those are just a couple of the many, many, many resources out there that'll give you some pointers about writing Ajax applications. JSON.org is interesting as... just for the amount and breadth of the application libraries they support. There used to be a complete... There we go. C, C++, C Sharp, Cold Fusion, Delphi, E, Erlang, et cetera, et cetera. And they provide libraries for all of these different applications, all these different languages. And I can tell you that the Java library is extremely well implemented. The only other instance that I'm aware of, and I just want to talk about this briefly, of a framework for working in Ajax that seems to be gaining any traction is JSON RPC. I experimented with it briefly. I ended up not liking it because I felt it was far too invasive. I had to write way too much configuration files. It wanted to know way more about my application than I wanted it to have access to. What I like about the framework that I've come up with is that it's entirely request-based. It doesn't know anything about session information. It could. It doesn't. There's nothing preventing it from picking that information up. But if you think about it, why do you write session-scoped information in a web app? For the most part, and it gets you into more trouble than it's worth. You would do it if you were building, say, a wizard. You're putting pieces of information together, a shopping cart. You're assembling information as you go. With Ajax, you end up doing all that in the client anyway. The amount of information, the information you'd be sending back and forth, if you've got enough information going up in your requests, you don't need session scoped information about your user in your server. I think is actually a buy. At HBS, we've begun clustering a lot of our applications, which means that we've got an application running simultaneously on three different boxes on three different processes. One of them goes down. Theoretically, you're in the middle of some kind of session. One of the other applications should pick it up. And we had to tie ourselves up in knots to come up with a model for shrinking the size of our session information down and being able to reassemble it from minimal amounts of information in the event of a failure. If we were expecting the clients to handle all the information that builds over time and changes during the course of your session, and all we were interested was information that was going back and forth that could go to an application and do a new query without having to say, okay, who is this person in session? What do I know about them already? A lot of that pain would go away. So I'm not convinced yet that JSON RPC, which has a lot of wants to know a lot of information about session scope, is really the way to go. Also, I'm still not entirely comfortable with the notion of remoting anyway, where a client can say, specify an object by name, specify a method, go up to the server, and execute that method of that object. I would much rather have you be sending through a form submit. You wouldn't necessarily use it for really sensitive information, credit card numbers, no. But for most of your day-to-day transactions, I don't think AJAX is intrinsically any less secure than anything else you build. It's really an issue of how secure you're building your information transfer in the first place. Having said that, one of the things that Flash is marketing as a big buy for the Flex architecture they're selling is that, yes, you can send information back and forth as clear text the way we do in AJAX. They will also give you a proprietary binary format that would go back between their server and your Swift plugin, your Flash Player plugin, that then would be decoded on the client. And so nobody would be able to sniff that, theoretically, and pull it apart and get the information out of it. Well, that's only as good as the 6 months it takes for somebody to reverse engineer that binary code and figure out how to break it.
Do you think, though, because inherent with AJAX is the use of JavaScript specifically, and given that something like the web client's GUI or your drag-and-drop interface or the sorting algorithms you're implementing, that's... ignoring the data that's actually transferred between clients, mm-hmm. It seems that there's a lot more intellectual property now being pushed back to the client.
I see what you're saying. You know, JavaScript is always available to steal. That's true. I suppose if you're using the standard libraries, the Yahoo libraries, you're minimizing the amount of information that you're of intellectual investment that you're making by going with these freely distributed sources. You're right. That's not an issue that's come up at HBS much, and it's not something we've thought about. We think about the security of the sensitive information much more than we think about the security of the code itself that we write. And again, that's also something that Flash will do for you. That Swift is a compiled binary that's running in the player, and there's nothing that's exposed to the end user. If that's a real serious concern for you, then that may be the better alternative. You've got to be one to foot the upfront cost to buy the server, buy the IDE. By the way, the IDE that they're marketing now is essentially just a plugin for Eclipse, but it's not free. frankly, I'm more than happy for people to look at my code, borrow it, fix it. Especially if they give me the fix. That's the one issue that I don't lose sleep over. I'm more likely to be embarrassed by somebody looking at my code than I am to be worried about them stealing it and not crediting it to me. Any other questions?
I can pose one other question.
Yeah.
It seems that the world is repeating mistakes of the past 5 or 6 years in which there's never been good browser support for even the simplest of HTML tags because you have Netscape and eWorks and so forth. It seems that the world is making the same exact mistake again. The sheer fact that you have this if and an else construct just to figure out what browser you're in seems to be a repeated nightmare. And I'm curious to get your sense of whether or not this is worse than that past situation, same, better?
Somewhat better. First of all, there are these X number of normalization libraries that will take a lot of that pain away from you. You don't have to think about it. You're just going to throw some arguments at a method, and they'll do the labor of the heavy lifting of figuring out what client you're using. It's also possible to spam those. is it Opera? I think even Firefox, you can get a plugin that will allow you to tell a server, hi, I'm Explorer, and treat it as such. All right. Well, I don't feel a whole heck of a lot of sympathy for somebody who comes at my site, lies to me at what browser they're using, and then finds out my site doesn't work. We have a mutual contract here. You're going to come at me. You're not going to try to read my website with an abacus. Why would you lie to me about what browser you're using? It's also true, from what I understand, that I haven't seen this myself, that IE7 is supposed to be making nice, and that you should be able to get a lot of these objects out without having to make an ActiveX object call. My guess is that behind the scenes, it's still an ActiveX object call that they've just mapped to a JavaScript function. But it seems like there is an effort underway to get these things more standardized. And I think actually the thin client model that these browsers are now supporting is driving that to some extent. And certainly Flash is worried about it, very worried about it. And again, if you want standardization, they insist that each new release of their player has 80 to 90% market saturation within 12 months of release. And they also say that even IE6 doesn't have that kind of saturation, much less Java 1.4 for the client. But certainly that's a standardized model that plays exactly the same without any of those issues, apart from how you actually embed it in the web page. Put the object tag, the embed tag, to make sure that you catch all of your browsers. And that's actually the only forking you need to do to get that to work. And they're building a very cool architecture. Lots of remoting functionality. One thing they demonstrated was a grid of data exposed to two different users. User A is making some changes to that data. He submits, user B sees the change immediately. That's pretty cool. You could probably write that in Ajax, and it would probably take you about 6 weeks. So, they're trying to stay ahead of the curve. My guess is that because the browsers really want a piece of that, of what Flash is doing, that they will try to get their act together to the extent that they make it a lot easier for us to write that, and it'll work and play in Explorer just as easily as it does in Firefox, as easily as it does in Opera. We're not there yet, but again, the normalization libraries get us so close that to stay out of this for that reason, I think, would be a mistake. That's not the best argument not to play with Ajax. The best argument that I can think of is simply, is it worth the additional overhead of writing that complex scripting, learning JavaScript, learning to use it intelligently? Because it's not straightforward. It's certainly not Navigator 4 JavaScript. It's not that sloppy. It's not that poorly implemented. It's not that leaky. But it's still not Java. It's never going to be Java. Used correctly, I think it can be a very powerful tool. Anybody I haven't bored to tears? Thanks.